My last job in the Pentagon, before I got out of the Obama administration, I was part of a working group that developed the DoD policy for lethal autonomous weapon systems. And that policy has been it's been changed since. But at the time, the big thing was that we thought was our great victory was to stick human in the loop language in the policy. It's like we were going to have a human in the loop. That made it feel like problem solved. It's not Russian roulette. It's a certainty. Deterrence is a certainty. And then the evidence people would point to say like deterrence is stable when it's inherently unstable to have a system based on fear. The evidence they point to is like, well, who's used nukes since we used nukes, right?
I love the, you know, the N is two. So we can't do deep analysis. And then people come in and be like, well, the N is only two. You know, it's like, well, great. All right. How do we argue that?
You know, to like both the moral question and Lyle, to your sort of question about like, are we screwed, right? You know, with apologies to Matthew Broderick's character, the only hero in this movie is John Spencer, is the missileer who refuses to turn the key. And I think like one of the most interesting parts of the movie is the sort of subsequent discussion that they're having at NORAD, where like, in order for this system to work, you need the certainty that the key will be turned, right? Like that's why the, you know, computerizing the system is attractive. You need the certainty that the key will be turned, because that certainty is what drives, you know, sort of deterrence that happens in the mind of the adversary. And you also need the guy not to turn the key, right? Like you also need an actor to throw off the orders that they receive and, you know, make a logical and moral decision, you know, not to do it, right? And that like what we know from nuclear history and what we know from, you know, also from this movie is that, you know, we could have sort of endless debates about the validity of deterrence theory and like whether like, you know, the extent to which it, you know, the certainty of turning the key is actually you know, preventing any, you know, wars. But like, we know for sure there have been multiple instances of you need someone who won't turn the key, right? You need someone.
There have been like 20 nuclear crises where the only reason nuclear stability, quote unquote, prevailed was that somebody defected from the logic of the system. Yeah. And a human error, in effect, saved us.
And so you need, so like the there's like a, there's this delta between what the nuclear enterprise says it needs to produce, which is sort of like, you know, perfectly rule following you know, missileers, and what it actually needs to produce, which is people who perfectly follow the orders as some indeterminate percentage of the time that isn't 100, right?
Moral thinkers, basically, or humanists, like,
yeah, and like, but they have to be undercover humanists, right? Like, they can't, like, the internal theory of the thing is that if you say you're a humanist, you fucked up the whole enterprise.
Yeah,
you
know, yeah.
Job. And I think it's like, it's both interesting for this movie, but it's also interesting to think about like how people in the other, you know, other parts of the national security state, you know, embody or don't, or engage with or don't, that duality that's asked of them. Like, I think that, you know, it's sort of like at its height in the nuclear space, but I think that anyone, you know, from the infantry to the National Security Council is sort of indoctrinated by the national security state to have like one set of, you know, hierarchical relations and sort of, you know, moral compartmentalization, and then is also actually ultimately asked to have another, you know, we could think of it as political, or we could think of it as moral, but like another set of considerations for what they do, without which the first thing would actually fall apart. Right. Without, and like, and, you know, arguably like we see some instances of it falling apart there. But like in order for any of this to work, you know, I think the centrist position is we need both things. And I think the progressive position is we only need the humanist thing. Right. But like, but at the very least, like actually, like if the, you know, if the centrists, you know, look into their heart of hearts, they understand that we also need the humanist thing. Even if they are loath to admit it.
But the humanist thing to me goes much further than just like having a human in the loop, right? And I know that you agree with me here. The humanist thing is basically something like disarmament.
Figure out how to not need the death machines.
Yeah, right. Because, I mean, this is a constant theme that me and Van run up against in like almost every movie we have on that we talk about on here, because like all movies are supposed to be exciting, so we're always talking about the last phase in a very, very long process where there were a million things that could have been done before to like stop this from ever happening in the first place. But of course, that it's not going to become a movie if we're talking about the boring stuff that we could have stopped well before. And you know, I think like the heart of being a progressive or just like a humanist is trying to stop it well in advance and not get and not even letting the discourse always just stay at like the last stage of the process, the most exciting part. I mean, we see this again with like domestic debates about standing your ground. Like conservatives love to fantasize about that last moment in the process. Like a guy comes into your room, you know, what do you do to defend your wife? And like, no, we're set. We're interested in creating a situation in which the likelihood of that happening is minimized for all sorts of, because of all sorts of policies, like better social policies. There's less guns in general. So the likelihood of someone coming in with a gun that you need to face off with your own gun is much smaller and stuff like this. It's really depressing listening to you guys talk about this, because it just occurred to me that like, what?
It's just a funny way to phrase it, but yeah.
Yeah. No, because I feel like at least we have these conversations about like the first step in the process when it comes to policing and social policy, but there's like no nuclear disarmament movement at all.
Not that penetrates Washington, no.
There's effective movements for, you know, advocating for downwinders and people who are being affected in communities. Big shout out to the people who are doing this work, but we're doing it without the apparatus that 1983 produced. All the million people that marched in Central Park are not doing it anymore, right? Like that produces pressure, that produces something you can work with. Sam can tell you much better than this. But yeah, the policy field is also, there was something, I meant to look this up a million times. There was some quote that came out in 2020 that we were all at home losing our minds, I guess. But like the overall, it was something like this. It was like $9 billion was like the budget for some sort of like some government department for a year. And I forget exactly what it was. It was irrelevant. And it was like $900 million, right? Like an order of magnitude less was like the budget for marketing for Nike. And then it was like $90 million was like the overall giving to nuclear policy, like field orgs. It was something like that. It was the orders of magnitude that was like that. And it just, there's not enough jobs. There's not enough people working on this stuff. I know too many really smart, really capable young people who have left the field for jobs or other reasons, which is unacceptable. And yeah, we're working towards solutions that are mostly rooted in the debates that we were having in 1983 or 1963. Right. All of this stuff is stagnant in a way that is rough. It's being beset on now by technology. Right. Like, first of all, like the capability chasing that we see, it's very politically ripe for the types of folks who do not want to hear about the human side, who do not want to hear about the the disarmament side, and much less the arms control side, which is, of course, a required part of deterrence. They don't want to do any of that. And so you get people caught up in debates about what types of weapons and who can build them and why is it got to be like my VC, right? Or you get caught up in debates about like what's the right type of posture to take if China were to, you know, pull something on Taiwan. And the answer is coming fast and furious that like, oh, we should just use our nuclear arsenal like early. And it's a far step away from even the nuanced debates that come from this stuff. But we're working on it. I mean, there are paths forward. A lot of them involve conjuring and, you know, summoning these lessons and coming back to be like, yeah, you know, sending copies of War Games to Heritage is not going to get it done. But hopefully they'll also have some impact on this type of thing. Hopefully there is a cultural engagement that isn't just supremacy top to bottom, right? And I think this is coming back around, unfortunately, today. But in 2020, that summer, we were preparing for the 75th anniversary of Hiroshima, and the field had a subgroup that was, you know, we called it the hashtag like Still Here Coalition. Like the problems, the people, the affected people, and also the looming everything is still here. And we were ready to talk about the anniversary with regards to what's going on in the country and basically all that I just said. But it became clear that like the real salient thing was local policing. That same logic is kind of rooted in all the suburbs of America and all the cities of America, where we have the idea where you must comply, you must do, you must suffer, you know, the violence if you don't. There's not much of a sell in there there's not much. It's not even like arms control. It's like, oh, humans should give up, or, you know, the police should give up some of their arms or something. It's more of like a push and pull between communities. And that's not happening because it's tilting far into, you know, oppression. This would have been crazier to say even a couple of weeks ago, but like, obviously it's playing out. And it's the same logic. It's the same people who are empowered by it. It's the same reason then that that book got buried, right? If you speak to these power dynamics and it doesn't really work for the people who have the power or in charge or are going to benefit from it, either, and in this case, increasingly, it's not like financial, it's political, then yeah, you're not going to get heard and it's going to be a rough go. But that's, I mean, that's, I don't know. I always bounce back. Like, that's the fight of a lifetime. That's worth a career. That's what we should all work on.
Yeah. A foreign policy or a nuke policy that doesn't strive toward disarmament is chauvinism. If you want an anti-racist foreign policy, you have to move toward nuclear disarmament. And the fact that that's a weird thing to say and that nobody fucking argues it is the problem. That's part, that's evidence of a problem. All right, folks, that's going to do it for our free preview of this episode. If you want to unlock the full episode and a whole lot more, plus our back archive and all of that, just check out bangbangpod.com. All right, peace.